Welcome back to the second hour of Guitar Tracks. I'm your host, Brian Tarquin. I had the pleasure of sitting down with rock legend Paul Stanley from Kiss. And for many of you, he does not need an introduction, but he is quite an artist, actually going to the School of Music and Art in New York City, where I grew up.
I had the distinction at the High School of Music and Art of failing art. I wasn't keen on instruction. I've never been very big on, I like guidance, but I don't work well to other people's timetables, or I just like to be self-motivated. Nobody works harder than me, but it's to my own schedule. So I would say I certainly grew up surrounded by the arts. My parents were both of European stock. And in Europe, the arts are like bread and butter. It's just part of life, theater, museums. So many weekends, certainly my dad in particular, took me to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Guggenheim, the Museum of Modern Art. Back then we had the Huntington Hartford. So yeah, the accessibility in New York was vast. So between that and going to theater or going to the opera, it's all important. And I urge people to push their limits, because those limits are self-imposed.
Paul is absolutely right. Most limitations that we have are put on by ourselves. Now he goes on to tell me how he got involved with his new art career and the Wentworth Gallery that it's being showed in.
I'm always looking for more ways to express myself. And that's kind of how I define myself, is by what I take on and what I manage to create. So whether it's writing a book or doing theater or painting, whatever it is, it's all an extension of myself. And I think the key to creating and finding out who you are is to not have restrictions, certainly restrictions that other people have. There's enough people around you who are going to tell you what's impossible. Don't be one of them. So about 20 years ago, I started painting, and I never had the thought of showing. It was done purely for me, and it was cathartic, and I was going through a tough time. So it was kind of purging with color. It was really just a way for me to deal with some issues that I was having in my life. And I put a few paintings up in my house that I particularly liked, and invariably people would come over and say, "Who did those?" And I didn't sign them because I was too self-conscious at that point. And then a few years later, a gallery owner in Maui, when I was there, said he'd like to exhibit my pieces. And I was reluctant and a bit ambivalent about it, but I did it. And lo and behold, people connected with the art and purchased quite a bit of it. So that was really the start. And here we are 20 some odd years later, and this has become not only an amazing journey for me, but incredibly successful, far, far, far beyond anything I could ever imagine. And the fact that people get a chance to find accessibility in art, where I think that there's a lot of, I hate to say snobbery, but there's intimidation by critics who tend to make people believe that your opinion is invalid if it isn't educated. And that certainly serves somebody well who's on salary, but it diminishes one person's ability to embrace something. So when somebody says to me, "I don't know anything about art," but I go, "Wait a minute, what do you need to know?" If something resonates with you and connects with you, that's what makes it good. Good is subjective. And the idea that somebody who likes meat should be telling a vegetarian anything. It's all a bit skewed wrong. So a long answer to a short question, but I felt the same when I was doing Phantom of the Opera. It's the idea that people feel intimidated to go to theater when in fact theater began in the street. So for me, it's always been about knocking down doors for other people that I knocked down for myself.
That's very true, because in the art world, because my mother was a modern artist in New York City, they are very critical on new artists. Now Paul tells me how he took on an entirely new role in his life, starring in Phantom of the Opera.
I think that if we listen to an inner voice, and if we're not delusional, that voice can often tell us what's possible. It's interesting that when I first saw the Beatles, and look, I'm deaf in one ear, and I was a pudgy little kid, but when I saw the Beatles on TV on Ed Sullivan, I found myself immediately going, without any basis, I went, I can do that. I didn't mean I could be the Beatles, but they were touching a nerve that somehow I related to. And when I was in London and at a theater in the late 80s and saw the first time Phantom of the Opera in the West End, there was a scene in it where somehow I had that same feeling that I understood what was going on and that I could do it. Little did I know how difficult it would be to reach the standard, at least I set for myself. But about 10 years later, my agents at CAA called me and said, this may be a little left field, but do you have any interest in theater? And I said, of course, I love theater. And I said, what is it? And they said, Phantom of the Opera. I said, absolutely. They said, but you have to go to New York and you have to do a full audition. I said, book the plane ticket. So I went to New York and did a full audition, which means not only doing the singing of some of the popular pieces, but also blocking, which means doing the staging. And they said, just like when you watch American Idol and they give you a gold ticket and say, you're going to Hollywood. They said, you're going to Toronto. And Phantom had run 10 years in Toronto nonstop. So the last thing they needed was Bozo to come in and ruin a billion-dollar property. So I got the golden ticket. I went up and worked my butt off to make sure that I was worthy of something that I had seen many times after I was in London. And I certainly wasn't going to turn this into Phantom meets the Rocky Horror Show. So I put a lot of hard work into it. And I would have to say, got standing ovations every show. I worked really, really hard. And it was incredibly gratifying to do. And I also loved that there were naysayers, understandably, people who sometimes wrote letters to me saying, I got tickets to see my favorite show, and then I found out you were in it, and I was going to ask for a refund. But I went, sure. And I understand that. I understand that because people have preconceived ideas of people's capabilities or who they are. So I am related to that character in many ways that I didn't realize when I first took it on. And so it was very, very gratifying. Anything, like I said before, any means of self-expression is priceless. And I urge everybody to not put on limitations that other people put on you, because everybody who's telling you what's impossible are the ones who failed. So, you know, I'm here to tell you that if you truly, truly believe, and that means being brutally honest with yourself, that you can do something, then go do it. And as far as painting, I tell people, go paint. And somebody will say, well, I can't paint. I go, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that if you try to paint a bottle and it doesn't look like a bottle, it's no good? not maybe in someone else's realm, but certainly shouldn't be in yours or mine. Don't live by other people's preconceived ideas or standards. I don't want to be the critic's darling if it means starving. I mean, it is no different in music. Somehow success on a large scale oftentimes means to the critic that what you're doing is incredible. And I go by the complete opposite. I think that when something is embraced by the masses, that validates it. It was very interesting when I did well at Phantom, some people, and I took it that it was meant well, but people would say, oh, you were born to play, you know, this came so naturally. And the fact of the matter is that stage acting is the complete opposite of what I do on stage with the band. When you're on stage as a performer in a band, for example, or a singer, you are engaging the audience. You are looking at them, and you are, whether you're cajoling them or having them join you in what you're doing, that's the complete opposite of acting in theater in a role, because in a role in theater, people become the voyeurs. They'll fly on the wall. They're watching something happen, and you're creating a truth. If they're buying into it, it's not because you're looking at them and saying, hey, you know, look what's happening. It's because you're creating a situation that rings true. So it's very, very different. You ignore the audience in one, and in the other one, you never turn away.
That's a very good observation, because as an actor, you don't want to involve the audience. And of course, as a lead singer and frontman of a band, you want them involved. Now he goes on to tell me how he created the KISS logo that is still used today and his art mediums.
Well, to this day, there have been many album covers that were designed by me and stages that we've used, and a lot of the clothes that we've worn were designed by me, and the KISS logo that Ace originally drew and conceived the idea of was the one that you see is one that I actually drafted and did in my parents' home in their living room on a piece of white oak tag, thick poster board, and that's the one we still use. Yeah, again, you don't need a degree to know what you like. And in creating, my premise has always been, if I please myself, invariably I'll please some other people. I don't like to second guess other people. I'd rather be true to myself, and that will resonate more, I believe, with other people. And if it doesn't, I'm fine falling on my butt as long as I do it on my own terms. Well, I love acrylics. Acrylics are great because they have a great viscosity, a great potential in terms of the thickness. They can be diluted, but I like working with them. And they also don't give you an infinite amount of time before they dry. So certainly for painting, it's my medium of choice. I used to work with pen and ink. They're artist pens called rapidographs, which basically now we get very close to with a extra fine point Sharpie or anything like that. So I used to do a lot of that pen and ink, but I didn't paint until about 20 years ago.
That's amazing how Paul is so creative. He came back to art, kind of soothing his difficulties. Now he goes on to tell me about his whole Wentworth gallery showing and the styles of painting that he likes to do.
A lot of the pieces, not coincidentally, that Wentworth will have at these upcoming shows are a lot of the most recent ones. And I really want to see myself as somebody without a style. And I'm again, certainly not Picasso, but Picasso once said, if I had to describe myself, I would say I'm a painter without a style. I like the idea that the only thing that I'm trying to develop with time is the means to express myself better and better. But in terms of sticking with one style, I have no desire to do that. I have no problem with two paintings coming in sequence being completely different than each other. That's part of a mantra to me, which is really no boundaries. I've been inspired by so many. Interestingly, I've heard people say, oh, you're fearless with color. And I have to say, well, what's there to be afraid of? For me, color validates life. And my life is rich and vibrant. And those are the colors that I paint with. There were lots of terrific people using colors, the Impressionists and movement after that called the Fauvists. Look, Picasso, just amazing. And there's so much to be inspired by. So one thing I really enjoy is I have no formal knowledge of color. In other words, there are complementary colors and primaries and secondaries, and I know nothing of any of that. I only know what appeals to me on a gut level, and that probably is part of what makes some of my art unique, is that I just paint, as far as colors, from my gut. Well, it certainly works for me, and not to take anything away from anyone else, because most of the great artists certainly were schooled, and they knew the rules before they broke them. Initially spent more time perhaps bringing more realistic images into the pieces, but again, I find myself wanting to get more and more pure, and purity to me probably means getting away from minutia and getting away from too much detail. After the Florida shows, I have two near Washington, D.C. And it's just a matter of me finding time. And then in August, there'll be a terrific exhibit that I'm just blown away by. Butler Museum of American Art, which really features and was built upon championing all the great American artists. They're doing a 2-month exhibit of my art. So that's, again, far beyond anything I could have ever anticipated. But it's humbling and very exciting.
That is quite an achievement, and Paul should be very proud of himself. Now he goes on to tell me about the music business and how Kiss, through the years, has been able to control their own destiny and be able to write their own ticket and their own paychecks.
It naturally happens if you get screwed. If you're more than a halfwit, you should realize that as much as you love being creative, there's somebody else who's just as talented as taking what's yours. So it's very important to have a handle on everything. Sign your own checks. And in music, let's just talk about that for a moment. It's called the music business. It's not just called music. If you want to wind up one of those whatever happened to stories, that's a perfect recipe for it. I think being fiscally conscious, that's not an anomaly or an abnormality. That's what it should be. Certainly, the great artists of the last century have all been pretty dollar wise, and whether it was having agents or just understanding that this is business, and there's rent to be paid, and if there's money coming in any situation, that money first belongs in the creator's pocket. We always wanted to, conceptually, we certainly wanted that kind of situation, but it's really trial and error to perfect it or get it to a point where it works well. So conceptually, we always believed in making sure that there weren't people taking advantage of us, but with time, you may find out that the people who were putting their arm around your shoulder had their other hand in their pocket.
I know exactly where Paul's coming from. I've written a couple of books about the music industry, the ins and outs, and how artists can survive. Now he goes on to tell me about Soul Station. This is a side project that Paul has done with a lot of outstanding players.
Soul Station is just an amazing band of 15 musicians, all steeped in Philly soul and Motown. There's three horn players, three other singers, an amazing musical director, and just top-notch players who played with everybody from Stevie Wonder and Smokey to the Temptations. And we just want to see this music that we love played authentically and with the spirit that it was originally recorded in. I think that hearing the Four Tops as a sample in a rap tune is not what they deserve or any other artist. It's too important and too great that music be heard, whether it's the Philly soul sound of the Spinners or the OJs. All the great Motown acts. There's too much great music and too many great writers and producers. So basically, the album was an extension of those classic songs and new songs that I wrote that, according to most people, are pretty seamless in terms of fitting in. So Soul Station is, I would have to say, a side project, but something that I love doing and performing with. We can call it Kismet or whatever. Everybody just fell in. Most of the band, surprisingly, didn't know each other. And it's like a family. Everybody just feels like they've known each other forever. And a lot of them were just word of mouth referenced to me. And then I called them up. And again, even in the band, I think there were some people who were curious whether we could pull this off or whether I could pull this off, and it's been gangbusters. It's just that's my roots as much as what people would associate me with more, which I guess is hard rock, blues rock, the British bands. As a kid, I saw Otis Redding. That was as much a part of my schooling as anything else. So that music is deep inside me. I smile because a lot of that music in different ways found its way into our music, but it's really not something where it should be that obvious. But I think that whatever you create is a stew of everything that you've listened to. I mean, to be quite honest, shout it out loud. Really, the arrangement of it is Four Tops, in that there's a lead vocal and an answering background. I Was Made for Loving You tips its hat certainly to Standing in the Shadows of Love by the Four Tops, because you've got I Was Made for Loving You, Baby, and you've got Standing in the Shadows of Love. So our music owes more to less obvious influences than the ones that we seem to be categorized with. Kiss is in the midst of the final tour, which is called The End of the Road, but they keep paving the road because it just keeps going on. We did South America, for example, and did all the stadiums and big venues there, and I thought that was it, but we're actually going to be back there in April, and then we'll spend the summer in Europe. But the end is for the band, as far as a touring band, is getting close, and we're going to announce all the final shows and where they'll take place. I think we're done for many reasons, and one of those reasons is that it really takes years, if not decades, for songs to get the patina and the sense of history that makes them, I don't know, makes people connect or enamored of them, because songs become photographs, time capsules of a certain period. So whether we put out great songs, which the last two Kiss albums, I think one was in 06 and the other may have been in 2010 or 12, whatever, had absolutely great songs, as good as anything we've written, but they were new. And people will say, oh, do another album. But then when you do it, people invariably say, that's great, now play Love Gun. And I understand it, because you don't go to see the Stones to hear something from their newest album. But in the same way, it kind of means doing a lot of work and not necessarily feeling the rewards. And anybody who tells you that they don't want rewards from their audience or public is lying to you. So no, there won't be any albums. And I think, but what's interesting are songs from the later period, which I would say, let's for argument's sake, say 83 or 98 even. Those songs have become classics. Lick It Up is now a classic song. Psycho Circus is a classic song. So it really takes years for those songs to take on that categorization of, classic.
I was really surprised that Paul was so influenced by the Motown soul R&B days. So here it is. Kiss, Shout It Out Loud, man. I was in the Kiss Army. Now let's see if we can hear that Four Tops influence in the song.
Hey! at the scene of a head-on collision on Grand Avenue this morning. He reported to driving on the wrong side of the boulevard when he struck a delivery truck and was catapulted through the windshield of his car. The driver of the truck is reported to be uninjured. The identities of both men are being withheld by local police. County legislators today are expected to rally to the aid of striking longshoremen in hopes of ending the 9-month deadlock.